Hi and welcome aboard Africa Agenda Endeavor with Derek Mazara right here on Channel Africa, the African perspective. I'm doing well, and how are you? Many people starting to get back from the holidays, others are yet to open work. Conditions of work have changed in the world today. You must be vaccinated for you to be allowed to carry on with work. The way our bodies react to the vaccine seems quite different. Others have illnesses in their bodies which they do not even have an idea about. And after vaccinating, the results might not be what they expected. Also, culture has a huge say. We do have people who do not believe in medication as a form of cultural practice. Will they take the vaccine or not? Are they encouraged to take it or not? And by who? Those are some of the arising questions. These are serious issues that we have to deal with in Africa today, and so why not talk about them on Africa Agenda Indaba this hour? Okay, so let's hear what your thoughts are with the effects the vaccine is having on people, especially our women, men, girls and boys here on Africa Agenda Indaba. Feel free to send me a quick text or call. WhatsApp +27682952710 on Facebook and LinkedIn. My name is Derek Mazarura. Our conversation won't be bordering only on that. We are also going to be talking about uplifting women, women empowerment in leadership and governance through media, and we will further dig into the background of child protection services in Africa through the eyes of a brave woman who will share with us her findings on cases of abuse involving 70 girls who were married off young. And so joining us this hour to discuss vaccine side effects, the African culture and chronic illnesses, is Pastor Michael Okuma from an organization called 100 Nigeria, and that we speak with Francis Chibalo, a news editor in Zambia. Part of the conversation is also Carol Wanyenze, a womanist and a gender activist in Uganda, and Africa Chiza, a trade policy analyst in Uganda. And now, thank you all. Please stay tuned. Let's begin our conversation after this short break.
Welcome to Change Your Game here on Channel Africa, the African perspective. We're coming to you from Johannesburg in South Africa. My name is Asanda Peta.
GDF Forum is about and what an opportunity it provides specifically for the audience of Change Your Game.
At Change Your Game, we believe entrepreneurs are the key drivers of tomorrow's African innovations and essential to creating a thriving African economy.
More support, just like invest more in young creatives and entrepreneurship, but actually do it, don't just talk about it, actually do it, you know, because there are a lot of creative minds, there are a lot of intelligent human beings in our country, so I think they should invest more in that and take it seriously, because it's a real thing.
Catch us every Friday at 900 hours Central African time with Channel Africa, the African perspective.
Welcome back. We're going to get right into it. But before we can do that, we're going to give someone an opportunity to say something following our opening episode this year, whereby we're asking you what you expect to see in Africa in this year, 2022. So this is what they felt like they needed to add to the conversation.
Yes, some of my new resolution for 2022 to better the lives of women, girls, boys and men in Africa. One, and very critical to me, is to dismantle patriarchy. And how do I do this? Now, I resolve to start by changing small habits, you know, in my thinking and my actions that exist because of patriarchy, because I am a man. You know, I have to do this. I am a man. She doesn't have to do that. You know, this is the way I want her to behave. This is the way she has to behave, by our tradition, by our religion, and by our belief. You know, so this is what I need to, this is what I'm dismantling in 2022. And I also take full responsibility, and I accept you know, full responsibility to end gender-based violence. It may have to do with intimate partner violence, you know, physical, psychological, and social violence, you know, female genital mutilation, and all that. I also resolve to embrace healthy and respected manhood, and also teach boys, you know, how to have positive attitudes, you know, towards girls and women, and also for them to embrace and also promote healthy and respective boyhood, you know. And these are some of the, you know, resolutions for 2022. And it is also very, very critical to point out here that in doing this, we need the support of the community, we need the support of the family, and to be able to achieve whatever resolutions we have for 2022, and in order to better the lives of women and girls in Africa. We need to also dismantle every upheld views and false ideas that man or male is superior to women. We need to improve in research and development. You know, in Africa, we are not very effective in conducting indigenous research. Indigenous research, you know, based findings will actually enable us to locally address some of the sexual reproductive health issues that has to do with traditions, beliefs, and gender issues. And there is need for an effective, you know, local, you know, research transformation in order to address some of the critical issues in sexual and reproductive health and rights. And it affects young people, both boys and girls, even also in area of, you know, maternal health, you know, pregnant women and all the other health issues that affect them. And going forward from there, I think from this point of research, you know, engaging in local research process, I see that it will take us further to, you know, digitalizing sexual reproductive health needs of the population. It could be youth or adolescent population, women, and all the rest. You know, what do I mean by this? The world is now, you know, going digitalized, and a whole lot of, you know, technological innovations are here and there. So I think it's very, very vital, you know, for us to see this kind of improvements. Where I know we've been talking about, you know, having youth-friendly centers to address, you know, sexual reproductive health of young people, you know, who are of different ages, you know, so that they could open up to some of the needs, you know. But I also think that we can actually digitalize it further by maybe transforming some of these youth-friendly centers into digital hubs, you know, using you know, telephones, you know, apps, and other technological innovations, you know, whereby we could actually, once you have an Android phone, I could attend to your sexual and reproductive health needs on phone. You know, I could, once you also have an access to an app, one could actually address some of these sexual and reproductive health needs, you know, immediately. And I think there is need for us to have this improvement in area of AIs, you know, artificial intelligence, you know, helping us to improve on sexual reproductive health and rights of young people, women, pregnant women, men and boys in Africa. I think this is a very critical improvement that I'm thinking about in sexual reproductive health. I also think that further to this, we could actually start thinking about this locally. This is indigenous development, invest in indigenous development, invest in indigenous research, by which we can actually address some of these needs.
Thank you for that. Please be the next to share with us what your inputs are. This conversation is never complete without your thoughts. And now to begin on today's discussion, Michael, are there people who are marginalized during vaccination happening in your country currently?
Absolutely. Marginalization is real when it comes to access to the COVID vaccine. You know, it's evolved a bit from what it was at the very first instance when Nigeria received our first batch of COVID-19 doses. And then it wasn't widely available to everyone. It was reserved for, you know, for the special people, people who had money. And there was a pretense that the Nigerian government was following the guidelines as given by the World Health Organization, seeking out the most vulnerable people and having them vaccinated first. But what was actually happening was the vaccines were hoarded and given to people who had money and who wanted the vaccine. But over time, when the vaccines were nearing expiration, they had to, you know, open up a little more. And now you have COVID vaccine centers in malls, in places of worship, in markets, and, you know, just about everywhere. But you see, that has only happened in the urban centers. In most rural communities where they don't have access to healthcare services, they still don't have the vaccine. So it's safe to say that people who live in difficult to reach terrains and in poor rural communities do not have equal access to COVID vaccines as those who live in the major cities in Nigeria. Mind you, this is happening at a time when Nigeria is destroying the scarcely available COVID-19 doses. On the 22nd of December 2021, over 1 million doses were destroyed because they were nearing expiration. And yet the government isn't able to make substantial investments to secure the vaccines on time and to ensure that they are stored properly. And you see, it's just messy.
Thank you, Michael. And still with you, is culture an important factor when it comes to vaccines, especially in rural areas?
Absolutely, Derek. Culture plays a very important role when it comes to vaccines and how people are willing to accept them. And not just in the rural areas, even in the urban centers. You know, look at Nigeria, for example, the largest black nation in the world with over 200 million people. But fully vaccinated Nigerians make up about 2% of the total Nigerian population. And mind you, the global population of fully vaccinated persons is sitting at a comfortable 50%. These are cultural perspectives about illnesses, origin of illnesses, who can be affected by the COVID-19, and the effectiveness of the vaccines have gone a real long way to discourage our people from taking it. There's this general conception our people have that Nigerians can't be infected by the COVID, and that even if we're infected, we could easily get treated and we're not likely to die. And really, statistics aren't helping matters, because when you look at the numbers, there are not so many Nigerians infected or dying from the COVID compared to the global population. And I know people have tried to look at it from different perspectives. Is Nigeria underreporting? Are we hiding data? Or maybe we're not diagnosing enough, or maybe we're not testing enough. But the truth is, people are just not dying. So initially it was all speculations, but it's been over a year now, and yeah, really, people aren't dying from the COVID-19 in Nigeria. So it further strengthened some of these myths that stem from culture, that we have, you know, a higher power protecting us, and that we have superior gene and all those kinds of stuff, you know. So culture has really played a really important role, and the cultural leaders in the society aren't going out of their way to sensitize people. And I don't think the government has used every avenue at their disposal to provide information to the Nigerian population about what COVID really is and why they should take the vaccine. So in this case, culture wins, and as it would appear, there is no real pressing need for people to believe otherwise.
Michael, what about people living with chronic illnesses like diabetes, high blood pressure? Won't the vaccine have serious effects on them?
I don't think the COVID vaccine is that dangerous to people who have chronic ailments. As a matter of fact, these people who are categorized on the, you know, the top priority groups who should have gotten vaccinated first, you know, because chronic illnesses make people more vulnerable to COVID and increase chances that they would die from whatever they are suffering from. And when the vaccines arrived, these were the first set of people who were encouraged to go get it, people who had chronic illnesses, people who were aged. Unfortunately, a lot of that has not really happened because a large proportion of these people who have chronic ailments or who are likely to be aged reside in the rural areas where information availability and access to COVID vaccines are not as abundant as what you have in the urban centers. And so there is not a lot happening to get the vaccines across to these people. So I can't say that the government is doing enough to reach out to them. And, you know, very important to also note that as large as a country as Nigeria is, you know, we don't have data on the health status of the population. You know, there are all these generalized statistics, but really, Nigeria cannot account for the health status of half of their population. In fact, of 10% of their population. And so it's really difficult to keep track of people who fall under these groups and to come up with the right strategies to reach out to them. So in a nutshell, are the vaccines dangerous to people with chronic illnesses? I don't believe so. And I don't think there is substantial evidence to claim that. And are they getting a special place in the vaccination exercises? Well, in principle, yes, but in practice, no.
Africa, what is the role of the church in Africa in encouraging vaccination, and how are armed religions like Islam reacting to vaccines and vaccination?
It is very important because the church, what we are currently experiencing is skepticism and lack of faith in the vaccination drive. And actually, it is this skepticism and lack of faith in the vaccines is one of the major reasons why there is still low vaccination uptake, even surprisingly in we the elites, in the among the educated. It is the most educated ones who are still having low uptake of the vaccination. Okay, but the church, and this is because of lack of faith in this drug, in these vaccines and all that. And to me, this is how, this is when the church becomes more important. The church to show, to exhibit that it is important for this, for the believers to uptake these vaccinations. I have seen churches in Uganda, for example, actually decampaigning a vaccine. You know, again, when you find churches talking about not believing that COVID is there, you see, it starts from the fact that, for example, when COVID started, churches were saying, no, COVID cannot kill a person who is religious. COVID cannot kill the body of Christ, you know, and that was wrong.
Do you think it is safe for Africa to take all vaccines or any form of medication as long as it's something that is coming from overseas or from Europe?
When we look at, when we examine our health and pharmaceutical industry as Africa, 98% of the pharmaceutical products, actually not only pharmaceutical, health products, including PPEs, all these are imported. Africa is heavily dependent when it comes to health products, including pharmaceuticals and all that. So unless we have reached a stage where we can manufacture our own vaccines, then it is important that as Africa, we are able to consume effectively these vaccines. I know there is a lot of discussions around, you know, of course, around there is hesitation when it comes to trusting Europe, trusting North America. But hey, come on. I don't think that we have a choice anyway, because there is no country that is manufacturing COVID vaccines.
Thank you all. Let's take a quick break. We'll be back after this short message.
It's about the people.
Inasmuch as we are one continent, but I think realities in the respective countries are different.
The IFFs represent a major drain on capital revenues in Africa.
Because without the political will, no major efforts can be made.
Please rate Africa's confidence in China. Are our people in safe hands?
Nigeria, like other African countries, have been in bed for lack of a better word with Chinese.
Jurisdiction and framework, to what extent?
African governments, African states are increasingly failing their populations.
We have a very high appetite for foreign debt.
You and me make Africa, and we have a job to do. African Insights is a show that constructively assesses all issues, infrastructure and development across the African continent. Join me, Derek Mazabura, every Wednesday morning at 8:05 CAT. Together, let's find solutions for Africa. Channel Africa, the African perspective. We're back on Africa Chenda Dab, and we're discussing vaccine side effects, the African culture and chronic illnesses with firstly Michael Okuma from an organization called 100 in Nigeria, and then we speak with Francis Chibala, news editor in Zambia. Also joining us in the same conversation is Carol Wanyenze, a womanist and a gender activist in Uganda, and Africa Chiza, a trade policy analyst in Uganda. Okay, so our conversation in this segment will be focused on women empowerment in leadership and governance through media and also child protection services. Carol, starting with you, I've spoken with you on WhatsApp about your experiences as a human rights activist many times, and we want the world to know about your current experience in your field. Tell us about it, child protection.
I've gone to many districts. The last district I was at was in Masindi, where I worked with the Marisha Dada. I met their girls. I met close to 70 girls. And trust me, it is a very sad view. It's a very sad view. Very sad. I met girls who were 12 years. And because they got pregnant and had babies, I met one. I'll not say her name for her own protection. She's 12. She's very beautiful. She's young. You will see she's vibrant. But of course, the amicability of men, they didn't see the innocence. They slept with her. So she has a 6-month baby. And guess what? She was staying with her stepmom and her own father. So when she got pregnant, since the family of the boy seemed more interested, they told her to go and get married. So she's a 13-year-old now, in a marriage, cooking, in marriage. Huh? How is that? Like, how does that work? These are all children, and the boy is around 19. So those are all children. So how does that work? And when you ask, I realize the next step, and she's not the only one. There are so many whom they're forced to marry. I've met familiar stories. I've met stories where girls are 14, 16, and the parents are like, me, I'm not going to pay for your school fees. Since you gave birth, you made a choice, go and marry. Others are saying, I want cows, me, I want my dowry, so go and get married. If not, I will arrest the boy. Imagine this is a girl maybe who is 15 and the boy is 17. So, and they're getting away with it. Parents are getting out with marrying off their young children, and No one is doing anything about it, actually, I've noticed. Because in most districts I've gone to, I'm actually now planning to go back and meet, I've written all those girls' names down, and I'm planning to go back and meet the local council leaders in most of those areas and the parents and say we can work on reconciliation so they can take back the girls home. Because a 12 or 13 or 15 year old child in a marriage, what is she doing there? I keep on asking myself, I even ask the girls, what exactly did you do in the marriage? And then what scares me the most, or what I noticed, but these girls don't want to talk about it because it has been normalized, is I saw bits of domestic violence. I saw some of these girls were bruised up, were beaten up. And when I would call them in a corner for a personal session, and we tell them, are you being beaten? They're like, they told us it's okay in marriage, you're supposed to be beaten. This is a 14-year-old girl being beaten, who is facing domestic violence at 14. And these parents, imagine she will marry up to 50 or 60. Won't she die in the marriage? That's what I'm imagining. If the man has started beating her at 14 or 15. Enlighten me. Is it the system that is failing? Do we just don't care anymore? Are we looking at privilege and power and forgetting minority and marginalized people? Are we that selfish that we are allowing our girls the future, because tomorrow we may not be here, to actually go through this? Are we that heartless or inhuman to allow girls to go through this suffering when they are this young? Do you know how, what kind of breed of women or girls we are bringing up? We are bringing up tired, exhausted, self-hate, self-stigma, low confidence, lack of self-awareness girls. And yet, as a women's movement, we are trying to push for girls to be more transformed and empowered. I believe a girl can get pregnant. Yes, it happened. Yes, the men are getting away with it. But how can we as local council leaders, how can we as leaders of the community, how can we as parents, how can we be as the adults or choice makers in the community? Met so many girls in the just by start of January that my heart breaks every time I think about the stories these girls tell me. I really believe there is no child protection in Uganda. Yes, the laws are there, the policies, some of them are there. But no one is enforcing, no one is following up, no one actually cares. Because we are looking at, we have put ourselves in classes of where there is privilege, where there is, where people fall, that we are forgetting that even we've had presidents who have come from the streets, we've had presidential aspirants who have come from. We've had women MPs who have gone through hell and they have won. Can we be more human? Can we plan for the children? Can we protect our girls? Because trust me, no one is protecting girls in rural areas or grassroots spaces. No one. No one. You listen to stories and you can't stop crying. You see how unfair the world is. You see how men are getting away with it. You see how adult men who are supposed to protect the girls are the ones who are taking advantage of the girls. It's ugly. It's very ugly.
Thank you, Carol. And now over to you, Francis. What role do you expect should be played by the media in channeling women in decision-making, in leadership and governance processes?
Okay, so I think, first of all, we need to, as a media, I think there's need to avoid looking at women to be a weak link when it comes to decision-making, issues of governance, and just generally. Most often we've seen that women are mostly sidelined, and hence this disadvantages them. However, I think the media should now begin telling stories about women. Let's give the women the voice that they need. Let's not look at them to be women, but let's look at them to be sources who are able to bring out issues and articulate issues like any other being, regardless of their gender, of course. But again, this requires that also the women, they need to be receptive enough. From my experience, I've had dealing with women or covering women, is that it's not easy sometimes getting a story from a woman, you know? Just for you to get a good story from a woman, they usually, sometimes there's that resistance. The women are not readily available, in short, to give out interviews. So hence, even the media, we tend to be discouraged by that. So I think it has to be a two-way thing. The women have to be available. They have to make themselves available. And the media also, they need to be available for the women.
Francis, how can informal trading platforms that cover women be supported or formalized for women empowerment?
Informal trading platforms, well, I think for this one, we just need to ensure that we create an enabling environment for women to thrive. It's as simple as that. There are things that we need to just deliberately put in place. We need to have deliberate policies for which aimed at supporting the women. It's as simple as that. Let's just ensure that we create an enabling environment. Let the women trade and do their businesses in a conducive way. They feel they are not neglected, or they're not seen to be competitors in that area, or enemies, you know, for lack of a better term. So let's just ensure that we create an enabling environment for all, regardless of one's gender.
Thank you, Francis and Carol. We are going to take a short break. Please stay with us.
Live Well is a show focused on the health of all Africans. From mental to sexual health, diseases to exercise, we discuss all things healthy and holistic African living. So let's talk, debate and motivate with Live Well, Mondays 10 a.m. CAT on Channel Africa, giving you the African perspective.
Welcome back on Africa Gender Indaba. We're discussing vaccines, side effects, the African culture and chronic illnesses with Firstly Michael Okuma from an organization called 100 Nigeria. And then we are also talking with Francis Chibale, news editor in Zambia. Also part of this conversation is Carol Wanyenze, womanist and a gender activist, and Africa Chiza, a trade policy analyst in Uganda. And now, Michael, at the beginning of this conversation, you mentioned that there's less access to the vaccine in rural areas. What do you think is causing less or no access to vaccines in rural areas? Have these inequalities been there all along in Nigeria?
So I think that less or no access to vaccines in rural areas reflects an inequality that has been in Nigeria all along. And there are a number of reasons I think this inequality exists. First would be government funding, which is almost never enough, you know, to pay the salaries of healthcare workers. In fact, as we speak, resident doctors in Nigeria have been owed salaries for a number of months, I think going back into 2021, maybe 4 or 5 months. And what that leads to is a lot of brain drain, because healthcare professionals want to give their value in places where they are getting returns, you know. So funding is a real big problem. And then we look at social amenities, and social amenities has two facets, you know. So first, you're looking at it from more social amenities in the urban centers and very poor social amenities in the rural centers. So no accessible roads, no pipe-borne water, poor electricity supply. supply and all of that. And, you know, housing is terrible in the rural areas, and healthcare professionals would not want to go stay in such places, and they would all prefer to either stay in the city or make their way out of the country, of course. But then social amenities, besides making it very difficult for healthcare professionals who want to reside in rural areas, it also makes it very difficult to maintain the supply chain and logistics that the COVID vaccines require. So again, you know, COVID vaccines are majorly created in foreign countries, mostly temperate regions. And then for these vaccines to be effective in the African continent, which is tropical, you would expect, you know, adhering strictly to the supply chain. And you know, with poor electricity supply, with bad roads and all of that, you know, time to transport a vaccine from place to place and to store them under the right conditions becomes a really big problem in these rural areas.
Still with you, Michael, and wrapping up, have you vaccinated and what are your thoughts about vaccines, especially the fact that they are created outside Africa?
Absolutely, Derek. I have been fully vaccinated. I think I got my second shot in September. It wasn't quite difficult for me to access the vaccine since a lot of people are skeptical about receiving the vaccine. So it was pretty much, you know, just walk in, get the vaccine and walk away. Since the healthcare professionals have to stay in malls and in, you know, busy public places, more or less begging people to come access the vaccine at no cost. But then I also feel that having vaccines handed down to African nations from Europe and America is, you know, it's a real big shame. It's quite unfortunate that we have to settle for that, because you have to look at the effectiveness of the vaccines that are administered on the continent, because these vaccines were not made for Africa and Africans. These vaccines were made in temperate regions, and bringing them to Africa, you know, it's quite different. So we're all going to respond a little different from people in some of the other climes where the COVID vaccines are made. And the question a lot of people want to ask is, do we have the capacity to create vaccines in Africa? And I think the answer is absolutely, we definitely have the capacity, we have the manpower, and I believe we have just about all it takes to create COVID vaccines that are designed for Africa and Africans. You know, the only thing lacking is the political will. And I say this because when the Chinese created their own vaccine, the World Health Organization was not quite agreeing with them, and Europe wasn't quite smiling at them, but they didn't care. They went on to vaccinate their people and everybody went back to work. But then when Africans create a vaccine, we create a medication, we want to get the full approval of the world. And even when a country claims, okay, I think we have something, you see other African countries distancing themselves from the solution rather than coming together to support their own and coming up with a truly African vaccine for Africans.
Thank you, Michael, and thank you all. We've come to the end of this week's episode of Africa Agenda Indaba. What is it about culture that could be standing in the way of development in our communities as we strive to establish good public health and HIV/AIDS free generation, a world without abuse of women and children? Are we not supposed to be talking more often about stereotypes and discriminatory practices that stem from some parts of our culture? As Africans, as we admit, the world is changing rapidly and attacks from nature and other things are likely to increase, and we must keep prepared. Your thoughts on how we can build back better to live healthy? Tweet us or me at Channel Africa One. Our Facebook is Channel Africa and our website is www.channelafrica.co.za. Send us a text or call us +27 6829 527 10. Join us again next week, same time on Africa Agenda. And I will make sure to be here for our next episode talking about issues that affect you and I. And our loved ones right here on Channel Africa, the African perspective, as we continue to spread the voice of love, respect, and friendship. My name is Derek Mazarura, and it's bye for now.